Welcome to the Game Deflators Podcast, episode 30. I am joined by Ryan, and my name is John.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 30, the big 3-0. You know, John, actually, I'm going to be 30 this year, too.
Are you turning 30 before me?
September.
I'm older than you by just 2 months.
Yeah, a little bit. All so right. we're both going to be 30, and we're hitting 30 episodes before either of us turn 30. You know what? I think that's a pretty good rate.
Yeah, I would say so, man. And the fact that we're both turning 30 in the same year, that's pretty solid. I'm pretty stoked, dude.
Well, happy 30th episode and happy almost 30th birthday to both of us. But anyways, that's not what we like to do here at the Game Deflators Podcast. Here at the Game Deflators Podcast, we like to talk about games we're currently playing, games we recently picked up, and the, not 30th, it'll be 30 soon, Inflation Deflation Challenge.
So, I'll have you know, yesterday, so today's May 13th, yesterday I was recording with James, because you had some Mother's Day stuff you were doing, and I tried your intro, and I almost had it, and James screwed me up. You'll hear it when you hear the recording.
I'll have to check that episode
out. Yeah, anybody that's listened to episode 30, if you haven't heard episode 29, go ahead and check that out. We talked about loot boxes, Apex Legends, and the Final Fantasy VII trailer, which I'm sure you're probably going to want to talk a little bit about, too.
You know... We'll get into that a little bit. We'll get into that. Well, anyways, neither of us picked anything up this week, so we'll get into it a little bit sooner.
I mean,
maybe.
I picked up a box in my garage. I had games. Does that count?
I mean, I picked up my Switch and played more Cave Blazers, so we did pick things up.
We did pick a lot of things up. So, let's go into what we're currently playing then. So, I discussed a little bit yesterday. I am still playing Salt and Sanctuary. Obviously, today that has not changed. I'm still playing Salt and Sanctuary.
How far in are you now?
I'm still in the second boss. Right now, I'm just level grinding at this point. So, similar to what you would do with any Souls type of game. And it's funny that now we use the terminology Souls-based game. Just for anything.
Souls-like?
Anything difficult that involves level grinding, it's automatically Souls. So, yeah, right now I'm just in a leveling process for that.
You have a good handle on the combat? The combat took me forever to get used to because it's so brutal.
The combat's not bad. I think my issue is that I've been playing it through a handheld mode with the screen. And I think if I kind of use it as just separate Joy-Cons, I'd probably feel a little bit better about the combat. Right now, it's just like the bulkiness of holding a screen that's kind of effing me up. So I think once I get just Joy-Cons or take my little controller hookup and do it that way, it'll probably feel a lot smoother. So I'm currently playing that. And for whatever reason, James and I over the last probably several weeks now have just been playing Puyo Puyo Tetris and just hammering it out, man. It's gotten to the point where yesterday, he and I were just like laying back, like he's sitting down in a chair and I'm laying down the couch and it's just like slamming pieces down. We weren't even playing around, dude. It was just hardcore going.
T-spin?
Oh, dude, it was nuts. There was just far too much Tetris going on. When we were done, I was dreaming Tetris pieces. Like that's all that was running through my head. And I miss playing Tetris with somebody so badly. So this has been fun. As far as Puyo Puyo is concerned, lot of fun, man. I would highly recommend if you have a Switch, pick it up if you like that and Tetris. Lots of good modes, and it's just fun. It's got that Japanese type of vibe where you have the different characters that are, calling out Tetris and different, battle cries and stuff while they're actually playing. It's pretty cool. It's a neat concept.
I played a little bit of Tetris Worlds on my GBA, but...
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that one.
I'm not a big fan of Tetris in general. Like, I'm not going to knock Tetris. I'm not going to say it's not a good game and it's not fun by any means. It definitely is. But it's just, I don't know. It's like, for me, it feels like putting a puzzle together by yourself. Like, it's just not one of those things that I'm really into doing. Like, just sitting there and I'm going to do some Tetris or I'm going to build a puzzle. Or, like, it doesn't have that excitement that gets me, like, putting together Legos or doing, I like Picross. If I'm going to do like a puzzly thing, I like Picross.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get you, dude. I have played Tetris for many, many years. So for me, it's always a go-to. If I've got nothing going on and my Tetris is sitting there on my GBA, I'll just play it. Like, it's one of those games, you could just pick it up, you can play it for 15, 20 minutes, and then you're done. Like, you don't have to play it any further than that.
Oh, see, I was just going to segue into... one of those games that I do when I'm sitting around and I've got nothing to do, I sit around and play more Cave Blazers. Imagine that. But, you know, that takes like at least an hour, hour 15 for a good run.
Yeah, I have yet to see that game yet.
Dude, I don't know. It's just, it still got me enamored. And I was going through and I've got, there's like 24 starting classes in it. I say classes, they just start off with like a perk or some items or a combination of the two. And I've done like not even half of them yet in successful runs. And I did like a really, really garbage, no synergies run and actually wound up being really successful by the end. Like, you'll be amazed, like, once you get into this game, how you finally start to understand how the synergies come together. And it's like, you'll get so far with a good run where you think you're on top of it, and then you just don't get enough healing. And then you'll have other runs where it's like, you're just doing garbage. You've got no good items. You've got no good synergies between your skills and your magic items or whatever. And then you just get a bunch of healing items and you wind up winning anyways, even though it's just kind of garbage.
Yeah, I got to sit back and actually watch you play that game, because you talk about it almost every week. And
it's just, I go back to it every week. It's like my new go-to thing for the last, what, like 4 or 5 months?
Now, the question is, will you beat it?
You know, I don't know if I will or not. I'm going to keep trying to go through all the classes. I know that there's other things in the game that I haven't even touched. There's like secret exits to get around, and there's these things that you can get to start off that make it more challenging. And I'm just not interested in that. I'm just kind of interested in the solo experience of the vanilla run right now. And that's probably as far as it'll take me. I almost decided to undownload it from my Switch just so that I would stop playing it and play other things.
So, speaking of playing other things, how's your ZOE going?
You know, we're 5 months into 2019, and I'm like 5 hours into my first of three Zone of the Enders games that I have to beat. And I know it's not going to take me that long once I put my nose to the grindstone. So I'm committing. You saw me. I switched my card out in my GBA. I'm going to make it my mission to start, actually, not like the last time I said, but actually start trying to go through Zone of the Enders and get these done, because I want to get them done before the end of the year. I don't want to be crunch time. I mean, at least I don't have 100 hours of Suicoden like you have to get through. So you got to make sure that you're like at least October before you start if you don't want to be cramming to get it done.
Well, let me see. So Suicoden 2, and I'm wondering how long it is to beat. So for those of you that do not know about this website,
how long to beat?
How long to beat?
Yeah, that's how I decided that I was going to do all three Zone of the Enders, because the first one's like 6 hours, the handheld one's like maybe 12 hours, and I think the sequel is like 10 hours or something.
We're pretty close. I mean, I think when we initially did it, you had the middle frame, like in terms of time. I had the high end, and James had, I think it was To the Moon or something on PC, and his, he'd already started a while back, so his is a little shorter. I'm looking at, from a completionist standpoint, 51 and a half hours.
Oh, wow. That's not as bad as I thought. I thought it was going to be like one of those 100-hour games.
Well, here's the thing. While I may not be a completionist...
Are you going to try to complete it?
Oh, God, no, man.
Because there's like 200 characters to get in that game.
Yeah, no, that's not happening. Like, even in Suikoden 1, it was kind of a similar process. Did not happen. I might have gotten 50%.
Suikoden 2 is so fun. I would love to try that game again.
So...
I know I've said that before. I'm going to play my own games. You play your game.
You play your game, and I'll let you know how it is, but... with Suikoden 2, while it is 51 and a half hours to complete it, I'm not going to complete it, but I am one of those individuals that will level grind the hell out of my characters in an RPG to the point where the final, like, 10 hours of the game are just pointless, like, just super quick battles. So I'm definitely enjoying, not enjoying, but I am very much excited to get to this title. And I've been looking at it for a few years now.
It's so great. The combat is so interesting and dynamic. Like, the way that your characters, like, do team attacks and how the attacks happen, like, simultaneously across. And it's, like, it's very back and forth and animated and active. Like, I really dig what they did in that. And I would love to see what Suikoden looked like in its... I mean, there's more than just the two. There's like at least three in that whole arc, right? And then are there more beyond that?
So I don't know too much on the backstory, so hopefully as I start to play these, I'll understand more. But on the PS1, you have Suikoden 1 and 2, and then you have 3, 4, 5, and Tactics on the PS2.
Okay, so there are more than... I knew that there were three, and I think the first three are all connected somehow.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, that's one thing I'm not completely aware of. I do know when I played 1, I truly enjoyed it a lot. And it was probably at the time... not even at the time, man. Now that I think about it, Suikoden 1, so far in all the RPGs I played, is very much at the top on RPGs I've enjoyed the most. So if Suikoden 2 is better, as you say, than 1, I'm stoked. Like, I cannot wait for this. And another game I'm looking to play, obviously. I bought the Sekiro Shadows Die Twice Collector's Edition. I still need to post our unboxing video of that. Probably super late in the game at this point, but... it's actually a game I've been really wanting to play as well, so I'm really torn. Like, do I get into this lengthy 41 or 51 and a half hour RPG, or do I jump into Sekiro, which is probably going to take me a good 120 hours of gameplay to knock out on my own? So, I don't know. I'm really torn, dude, on which way to go. I'm really leaning towards Suikoden, only because it's on the list. I've got to get it completed this year, and once it's out, I can focus on any other game I want to. Including Birth by Sleep of Kingdom Hearts.
You know, if we both buckle down and just stick to our new game's resolutions, you know, it's something that we wanted to do, and we set a challenge for ourselves, and let's not get stuck in Mount Moon.
yeah, we're going to use that from now on, getting stuck in Mount Moon.
Yep.
Okay, well, I think this is a good opportunity to jump into our news for this week, or really the week 2 weeks ago. When this is being released.
So a couple things this week. I want to open up with actually the last thing on our list here. So the Oculus Quest is out and it's been reviewed and people are really digging it. And I had the question that I wanted to ask John is, John, would you rather spend $400 on an Oculus Quest, which is, it's just... standalone. It has the VR headset and it has the two motion controls that you use in game. Totally wireless, self-running. It's all in one package. I mean, and they're even pitching this. They're getting exclusive titles. They're launching it as like an exclusive console type thing, separate from, you know, you don't need a real fancy computer. But on the other hand, you already have a PS4 Pro. I do now also. For $409, which is basically the same price, you can get a PSVR, the controllers, Beat Saber, and Borderlands 2 VR.
So my answer is going to shock you. My answer is neither. I am actually looking at news articles to see any more news that comes out on the PSVR for the PlayStation 5.
But I'm saying for $400, you're not going to buy a PS5 and a second gen PSVR for $400. I'm saying you already have the PlayStation, so that's already down. Like if you wanted to get an HTC Vive, it would cost you more money, and you'd probably have to put some upgrades into your computer to be able to run stuff with it.
All right, so I have the ultimatum of you have to pick one.
You have a $400 gift card.
You have to pick one.
And the store only sells one or the other.
Damn, dude. Well, I guess I'd need to see. You know, honestly, what games does the Oculus have on it outside of, like, what I've played at the Microsoft store of, like, cheapy, you know, little snowball fight games and stuff?
I mean,
it's not something I've honestly looked into very much.
I don't know what the exclusive titles are. I really should have actually looked at that before we did this.
You probably should have.
They have all kinds of stuff. I mean,
are we talking third, like, major third party titles are on this?
Major third party companies are signed to make Oculus VR games, but
as
I mean, PlayStation Store
as it
already
stands
has
right
200
now.
Games.
Exactly. So as it stands right now...
So Oculus has to have more than that.
Well, here's the thing. As it stands right now, based on the history of the PS4 Pro with the VR and a number of titles on there, I would be inclined to pick up a PS4 VR at this point because of that. Now, when you get into the idea of the Oculus Quest and the possibility of not having to have it connected to anything and I would assume cloud-based storage for your titles, similar to, like, you know, the PlayStation Store, and when you save things on there. Well, PlayStation Store, but, you know, when you buy a game on there, you can save things to the cloud. I would say, from a functionality point, I would probably rather have an Oculus Quest, but from a existing games library, not knowing exactly what's on the Oculus Quest or Oculus Store, I would go with the PlayStation.
Is that from a collector standpoint? Like, you're afraid to not have physical media to collect for it?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say it's that. Because if I were to get something like an Oculus, I would look at it from the standpoint of, this is VR. This is just a fun thing I'm going to play every now and then.
How soon are you looking to get into VR? Because VR has always been one of those things that's on the periphery.
I'm waiting. I mean, in all honesty, I am. That's why I said neither initially, because I am waiting for, I've heard rumors, or read rumors,
I mean,
really.
The PS5 is definitely going to have full integrated VR as, like, a feature.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they're saying.
I mean, we predicted it here. I said that they're going to sell a $1,000 PS5 that comes bundled with a full second-gen PSVR. Well, that's still my guess. My money's still that.
I would honestly go as far as saying that the second-gen VR is not necessarily going to be as high of a price point as you think it is.
But bundled with a PS5.
Well, even
and
bundled.
And they just released the PS5 stats the other day.
Yeah, but I think I've seen some stuff that the PS5 is probably going to be about $500 when it comes out. I would say you're looking at probably...
So 400,
I would say,
for the VR.
No way. I think the VR is going to be 200 to 300 max. It's second gen. The only difference.
Yeah, but the PSVR right now, the first gen,
is
230.
Yeah. So,
and that's without the controllers.
So think about this.
That's just the headset, no controllers. And those controllers that they're selling now are PS3 Move controllers.
But we're talking about a second generation VR that right now you've got the first gen with the way it's set up. Things are going to be cheaper. You're going to be moving into a second generation version. The only difference being that it's wireless, hopefully.
It's not going to be cheaper.
We'll see, man.
It's going to be better.
We'll see. Yeah, it'll be better for sure. You better hope it's cheaper.
Nothing's ever cheaper. The PS4 costs more than the PS3.
Well, yeah,
and
the PS5
will cost more than the PS4. Why would the PSVR2 be cheaper than the PSVR1?
Because you're talking in relation to something similar
to... The PSVR1 retailed for like $400 new when it came out.
Yeah, and think about when the PS4 initially came out, it was retailing for about that much, right? And then PS4 Slim came out, and then the PS4 Pro came out at a higher price
point.
So
you're going to wait 5 years.
Well,
from now for them to come out with...
Technically is released in 2020, the PS4 or PS5. We'll see where things go. Right now, honestly, VR is just not a major interest of mine. What I am doing, though, is stocking up on PS4 physical copies of VR games. So when the PS5 VR does come out,
I'll have backwards compatibility.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get as many VR games as I can cheap. So that's really where I stand on that.
Where do you stand on getting a PS5? Like, I know that you're a wait and see, wait for the price to drop kind of guy, and that's kind of how I was. I didn't get my PS5 or 4 until Final Fantasy 15 came out, and that was pretty heavy into the life cycle. But, I mean, if we're going to be topical, we're going to have to bite the bullet at some point. Somebody's got to know what's going on in the real world.
Yeah, that's true.
We can't just live in the past.
I mean, maybe we can get a Patreon going. People can donate money to us to get the PS5.
If all 30 of you give us a dollar,
we'll get
by the time the PS5 launches,
it'll increase in interest.
We'll be ready.
Yeah, exactly. So as far as the PS5 and its release date and purchasing it like a day one, I'm not all about day one purchases. I've been burned way too many times on day one purchases. I'm done with them. I am one to wait at least 2 months. That's where I'm at least 2 months now with the PS4.
But then you don't get your no questions asked refund from GameStop.
Now, with the PS4, I actually waited till the Pro was released and actually bought a Pro brand new because I was able to bundle it with my TV. And I think I got the TV and the PS4 for under $1,000 with like 18
That's
months, zero interest. It's like, it's a no-brainer at that point. So, yeah, that's really where I stand on the PS5. I'm a wait-and-see kind of guy, and we will see how it is. We will probably still get burned even if we buy it within 2 to 3 months.
So you would go with, I guess we determine, you would go with the PSVR bundled with Beat Saber, Borderlands 2 VR, and the controllers, which is a good segue because, you know, I've been thinking a lot about Borderlands 3, and I don't know how much you guys talked about it. It doesn't look like you guys talked about it at all, but Borderlands 3 is the new Fallout, is the new, Apex Legends. You guys talked about Apex Legends. What else were we talking about that had all the bad press lately?
Anthem.
Anthem, and there was something else too, wasn't there?
EA in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just EA.
So Borderlands and Gearbox has jumped on the flaming pile of dog shit that is, you know, the news these days. And Randy Pitchford had his whole big bitch fit, whatever you want to call it, about microtransactions in Borderlands. He made a misnomer during an announcement saying that, hey, there's not going to be any microtransactions. And I'll give him that, you know, he didn't mean no microtransactions. He did say that they would have cosmetics. And then it got all blown out of proportion because they're not going to have any loot boxes or any of that stuff. And that's the point he was trying to get across. But microtransactions is just, you try not to say it because it's such a bad word to say anymore because people are tired of it. And there's actually legislation being pushed by a U.S. senator now.
Yeah, we actually talked about the legislation and such in the last episode.
Yeah, so yeah, they're trying to avoid using microtransactions. And they're doing a good job, especially because Borderlands is like, of any game that should have that kind of garbage pumped into it to make it ruin the series, Borderlands is the game that would do it. And I'm glad that they're not doing it. But for him to react and just call out Game Informer for posting an article saying, no, they are having microtransactions, they're going to be cosmetic stuff, and then just reacting like that, and then everything that's come out, I don't know what you saw about how he has been accused of physically assaulting former Gearbox employee who voiced Claptrap and is not returning to voice Claptrap in the next Borderlands title.
That's pretty crazy, dude.
Yeah, and they just had the their hands-on press coverage thing where they invite all the creators, content creators, YouTubers, all them in to play the game hands-on, film footage and release stuff. I've been watching some of that. So it's really up in the news lately, and I'm a big fan of Borderlands. I played 1 and 2. I didn't play the prequel sequel, and I didn't play Tales from the Borderlands, but I really enjoy Borderlands. I think it's a really cool series. I'm really interested in the third one, but with all this stuff going around, I definitely think it's one of those games I'm not going to try to get on day one, and I'm going to sit around and see how it is when it comes out, make sure that it's worth the buy, and then pick it up eventually, because I have a feeling it's still going to be great. I don't think that the bad press coverage here is going to pull it down. I think that Randy Pitchford is the problem here, and I think that he's always been the problem with Gearbox. I mean, from everything I've read and seen online, it seems like he's kind of one of those face of the company CEOs, and he kind of makes it look ugly because he tries to make everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, David Cage, nobody really has a super high opinion of him, and the games are like okay at best. I've never actually played any of them, but like Heavy Rain was supposed to be okay. Detroit Become Human, everybody was playing it, but nobody was playing it because they thought it was like an amazing game with like a really unique, beautiful telling story like he was trying to make it out to be.
The one I can speak to would be Heavy Rain. And I truly enjoyed that game, actually. That was, in my opinion, a fantastic game. At the time, and did he also make Indigo Prophecy?
And Beyond Two Souls.
Okay, yeah.
Or is that what it is?
Yeah, it would be Beyond Two Souls, I believe. Those are all games I haven't played yet. The only one I have played is Heavy Rain, and I really did like that game. Honestly, I liked it a lot.
I mean, they're definitely unique and interesting storytelling opportunities, and they do kind of like a better or more interesting take on the more simplified Telltale type of game story, but you know, the graphics are usually pretty good, and he is a storyteller, but he himself is not a great character person.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of those face of the company people. like Pitchford is here. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things where a CEO can really, or a, you know, face of the company man can really bring down the opinion of something because of their own personal take and involvement. And I what I'm trying to say is I think Borderlands 3 is going to be good. I've heard that it's good and that we don't have to worry about it, but I'm still going to wait. And that's really, because you asked me before we were recording, like, what I might be looking forward to. And with all this Borderlands news, that's the only thing I'm really looking forward to. But I've got these odd reservations just because we've seen so many dumpster fire game stories lately where it's like, all the company stuff is really making these games crappy. And now they're out and they're real crappy and they're not going to get better.
So I'm going to go into a two-part thing here. So I'm going to get off topic for a second and get back on topic. So as you said, games we're looking forward to, I was actually just kind of perusing our indexing site here that we go to, and Naughty Dog is looking to close out development for Last of Us Part 2. That excites me. I have been looking forward to a Last of Us Part 2 for a while now, and to hear as of 3 hours ago that they're looking to close out development, that's just one step closer to getting that game in my hands.
You want a hot take?
What's that?
I'll give you a hot take real quick.
What's that?
Guess what game Ryan's never beat?
Get out of here. Get out of our little recording studio.
Nope. Yeah, I played some of The Last of Us.
Oh, you're disappointing.
And then
me.
I stopped playing.
Dude,
The Last of Us.
It is fantastic. It's one of the greatest games I've ever played. Story-wise.
If you say so.
Oh, dude, it's fantastic. But to get back on topic with your microtransactions. So one thing I did want to point out is microtransactions have really been around for a number of years already. It's just not something that has really been as, I guess, frowned
upon.
They didn't
loot box it up.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember on playing Pain on the PS3, which is a downloadable game, and you had the ability to pick up skins and different characters for like a dollar, you know, and different themes and other little minor transactions.
Nobody's ever on it about cosmetics.
Yeah, well, I mean, even new characters and things that, I mean, if you look at it from a standpoint of DLC and purchasing expansion packs and all these other things, like little microtransactions here and there have never been an issue. But to your point, and legislative points too now, it's gambling to do the loot boxes. Like, it's just straight up gambling.
Well, and it's taking advantage of people who are not, you know, in financial control of themselves, and also
kids.
Taking advantage of children.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really preys on those whales, those people who don't have the restraint to see how shallow these experiences really are financially, but are willing to invest vast sums of money into them. And, you know, to that effect, we should try to do something to try to help these people, because they're not helping themselves and the games companies don't care about them. They're just using actual psychological trickery to take advantage of them.
And that's why I'm excited when I hear about a company saying we're not going to have loot boxes or major microtransactions of that nature.
EA came out and said that about the next Star Wars, even though they caused this whole thing with Battlefield. Like,
well, yeah,
the industry got too greedy, and finally the law caught up with them, because they move, technology moves way faster than the law moves. So it's like, okay, that bubble's going to burst now and everything's going to go right back to normal. But hopefully not. Hopefully there's some change coming. I mean, there was a walkout at Riot. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't hear about that, actually.
There was a walkout at Riot protesting treatment of the workers. I think it had something to do with sexual harassment and just employee rights.
You're talking about a lot of harassment here today.
Well, there's so much stuff going on. I mean, how much, besides all the bad game news that's been breaking lately, the other thing that's been breaking every week, it seems like there's a new complaint about excessive crunch and just people working hundreds and hundreds of hours at these studios to push out these games, and it backlashing, and, you know, all the non-union work that's going on and how poorly they're treated, and now they're trying to push some unionization and trying to get some rights. So hopefully once we get through all these dumpster fire games, hopefully once all the game companies can't take advantage of all these massive loot box and microtransactions they can also stop taking advantage of their employees, and maybe the games industry can like kind of reach up to an acceptable, respectable level of putting out a good finished product and treating the people making the product with some dignity.
Yeah, you know, the only major issue I see coming from a consumer perspective on this is when the employees get, you know, better rights in terms of being unionized and stuff, and when microtransactions and loot boxes and all that are gone, how does that affect the overall price point of these games that are coming out? I mean, are we looking at it in terms of another raise in price? Are we seeing next gen as $70 to $80?
I think it needs to go back the other way. I think the reason that these games are so expensive to make, and the reason that these people are working hundreds of hours of overtime for seemingly no real need or reason, is because every year they want to put out these giant sandbox games that everybody's getting tired of. Stop putting out giant fucking worlds with a bunch of empty space in them and just, you know, put out like 2 or 3 solid 20-hour experiences a year instead of one giant empty thing that's exactly like the giant empty thing you put out last year. Like, there's no soul left in these big Ubisoft climb a tower, unlock parts of the map worlds,
looking
check
at you,
off all
Assassin's
the
Creed.
Well, Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, you know, they're the same thing.
Well, Far Cry was at a point in time years ago. Well, I mean, there's only, what, 5 Far Crys? And I've been playing Far Cry since the original Xbox. So in terms of the number of Far Crys, I'd say that isn't as good of a comparison. But Assassin's Creed, yeah, there's like one every single year since it was released on the PlayStation 3 initially.
But they're the same big open world sandbox explorey games. And it's like, you know, put out one. Don't make every game. They're trying to make every game into Destiny. Every game's trying to be these live service marketplaces where they want you to invest hundreds of hours. I mean, that's what they did with Anthem. That's what they did with Fallout 76. They want these big open worlds where you buy the game for $60 and then you play it for hundreds of hours and you give them hundreds of extra dollars. Like, if you want $150 a year from me, just make 3 $50 games that are worth $50. Don't make me pay $60 and then beg me to spend $20 because otherwise I have to grind through it for hundreds of hours to get the stuff that I want. Just make fun games. Just make fun, tight games that people want to play. Like, there's a reason that everybody's popping off $20. I pay $15 for indie games when they come out because it's $15 and I'm going to have a good time with it.
Yeah, and we discussed that a few episodes back too, that, you know, I'm at the point as well where I would rather buy an indie game at this point. That's why I got a game like Owlboy or picked up, Salt Sanctuary. Now, those games, I'm not saying they do, but some of those indie games might have microtransactions here or there, but I'd rather have microtransactions with an indie-based game and a small game company than a conglomerate like a Ubisoft or an EA or somebody asking me when they're already extremely, you know, just extremely valuable public companies. Like, why would I give you more money? Like, you've already taken my $60 and you're going to release a game next year anyways. It's just, I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah, so I think that they could just tighten up and sell finished, fun products instead of trying to drag it out and make you try to pay more. And, you know, things are hopefully turning around. There's a lot of news out there. People are being more vocal. People are signing their name to these reports of, you know, sexual harassment in the workplace or all these crunch time events. So it's like things hopefully will change. I mean, the loot boxes aren't going to last forever. That gravy train's on its way out. So there should be a lot of change turning around. Maybe by the time the next console generation kicks off, maybe we'll see, you know, some more progress. And also there's going to be, you know, this Oculus Quest is out. We'll see how that matures over the next few years. Stadia's coming out. We'll see how that goes, because like when you don't have to develop for hardware and worry about getting the hardware in the home and you can just openly develop whatever you want and you're not beholden to, you know, whoever can get you in the door to make an exclusive title and pull you to, you know, everything that's been going on with who's, I don't know, anybody. There's so much bad news that I'm hoping that it turns around. I'm just praying that it turns around.
Speaking of bad news, by the way, so I saw a small article the other day. I'm hoping it's not true. But, you know, we've had these suspicions that the PS5, when it comes out, is going to be completely backwards compatible all the way up to PS1. Like, I've seen rumors about that. I've seen rumors of PS4. You know, a lot of people are saying, like, if this is the last console, like, let's make it backwards compatible all the way through, right? Recent report I read said that it is not going to be compatible with anything prior to PS4, which is kind of upsetting, because it would have been awesome to have like that all-in-one machine of like I could play any game in it with no issue, rather than having to boot up a PS2 or having to use PS Now or, you know, going through and repurchasing my games that I already own.
Dude, by this point in time, I don't understand why you can't just like put a laser pointer in your microwave and a PS1 disc and hook your iPad up to it and play a PS1 game. Like, that's so old. You should be able to put a PS1 game in anything that spins with a laser attached to it and play it.
That's a very good point. I mean, I can put it up to a PS3. That's about it.
Yeah, there's no reason that a PS1 game shouldn't just be playable.
Like, if I can play, I don't know if you can even play CDs on them, but, you know, if I could play a CD on a PS...
People own CDs?
Yeah, I own CDs.
Dude. New CDs?
Not new CDs, but I do own CDs, because if you're in an area of no signal and you can't get Spotify up or no radio, you gotta have CDs. Dude, I do a lot of driving. Come on, stop looking at me weird. Either way, man, if I could put like a CD into like a PS4 or PS5 and it'll play music, which I haven't even attempted that yet, so it gives you an idea on where I am on like CDs in my house.
Well, couldn't you put PS1 games into CD players and listen to the soundtrack on some of them?
You know, I don't know.
Or is that PC games?
It might be PC games.
Okay.
I'm not sure. That's a James question. And even he might not know that.
Because I CDs in the PS1 and it had the audio player.
Yeah, yeah. I used to listen to music like that all the time when I was a kid. I'd pop it into my PS1, have the little blue squares come up, and I would listen to music.
I mean, that was even a big deal. That was a really big deal for the 360. For the 360, you could plug your thumb drive in, and it had, like, the music player as one of, like, the more prominent pop-up features when you'd hit the Xbox logo button inside of a game.
Dude,
so that you could play your own music while playing a game.
There's nothing like playing Gears of War 2, destroying people, and having Down with the Sickness playing in the background of your console. That was some of the most fun I had playing a game.
Okay, I'll give you one. This is a weird one. This is straight from the past. And I don't know how we discovered this, but when I was a kid, we discovered something crazy. Might as well be Walking on the Sun by Smash Mouth lines up almost perfectly with Corneria for Star Fox 64. You could play that song in the first level of Star Fox 64, and it's like perfect, man.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Huh. We'll do it after the podcast because you've already got the N64 hooked up.
Okay, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, it'll be good. Star Fox, do I? Yeah, I own that, yeah.
There's no way you don't own Star Fox.
Yeah, I probably own, like, multiple copies.
So, John, why don't you tell us why you have the N64 hooked up?
That's a good segue, sir. That was a very good segue, and I'm just going to call it out. I have the N64 hooked up because we played our Inflation Deflation this week. So, for those of you listening, all 30 of you, maybe 29, maybe 5, we played F-Zero-X on the N64. Ryan, you want to give a little bit of information on that?
So F-Zero-X, developed by Nintendo EAD, published by Nintendo, came out July 14th, 1998 in Japan, October 26th the same year, and November 6th EU. October 26th NA. But anyways, it's the F-Zero for the N64. I have no experience whatsoever except for playing a little bit of a demo and a little bit of an arcade version of F-Zero GX for the GameCube. So I have never played this game before. And not only did it rock, but the soundtrack rocked.
Dude, I've never had a racing game that I enjoyed the music that much on it. It was a blast playing that game. Too bad we couldn't get the HD upscaled on that. That would have been pretty sweet to have it working out like that. But yeah, so like you said, I think you said 15 loose, right?
Yeah, and then... so it's running 15, 25 loose, 41, 41 complete.
Yeah, so I guess I'll give a little bit of my experience on what we did. So we started out playing in the versus mode against each other. Ryan won about just about every time. I don't even know how. I felt I was playing pretty well. So the versus mode,
gotta go fast,
four people, similar to like a Mario Kart. You can only have four people on the screen during versus mode, up to four players or four controllers really. And there's no weapons or anything. It's just straight up racing boost modes, and then you can spin attack and crash into people, and that's about it really, when you think about it. So it's a little boring in that perspective, that there's just not a whole lot going on, but at the same
fast.
Time, yeah, at the same time, it's kind of a true fast racer, versus like Mario Kart, which is like a gimmicky go-kart type game where you're racing, but
there's
you're still attacking
each other. There's a big difference between kart racers and actual racers. And yeah. I mean, you're not wanting for items in Gran Turismo, but in, you know, Forza and, what's the crew, you know, in those games, like you're really looking to have that realism and drive real cars and, you know, be in real places on actual terrain and feel, you know, these things digitally that you're never going to get your hands on in real life. So this is kind of a good blend between the two. It's not a crazy realistic racing game, but it's not as wacky as a kart racer. So it's an interesting sweet spot, but you're going like hundreds of miles an hour and it's just so crazy.
I think it actually said like 1300 miles an hour in a game
for top speeds. Yeah, it was
crazy. Yeah, so I absolutely enjoyed it actually. I've played a little bit of F-Zero on the GameCube. I think you had said that too. So
yeah, F-Zero GX. I remember the Nintendo power spread on that because it was one of those games they had arcade cabinet release of it, and you could bring your GameCube memory card and it had a plug in for your memory card on the arcade cabinet so that you could do data transfer and like either get exclusive content or possibly bring content like a personalized racer or something to it. I don't remember what it was, but I always remember being fascinated, but there's never been any good arcades around here that would have had anything like that at the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got Starfighters around here, which isn't too bad. You haven't been
there
yet.
This was a long time ago. This was like when Nintendo Power published it and the game came out on GameCube. That was a long time ago.
I gotcha. Well, to get into, I guess my last little bit of experience on this, with the versus mode and then obviously the standard Grand Prix mode, I enjoyed it. It had pretty good speed. The controls are going to take a little getting used to. It's fast. It's a different type of racer. So you really got to get a grip on how do you drift? How do you do spins correctly? You know, memorizing tracks and all that. Like, it's something that comes normally if any racing game you play.
Yeah, there was tons of cars that we did not have access to. Like, the unlocks for this looked pretty heavy. And with all the different rated stats on each of the vehicles, I'm sure that as you get better at the game and unlock more of these things, you really can probably find, like, I think there was like in the, we did the death mode,
which
death
was
race mode,
30 or 29
like
racers,
30 or 29 racers, something like that. So if there's that many different unique vehicles, there's gotta be something out there that fits your play style. Once you get it unlocked and open, like you could probably really pick something that handles just how you want it to.
Exactly. And, now that you mentioned, the Grand Prix mode also had 29 other racers, including a rival, which was pretty cool. I don't know where that falls in. But yeah, that was an interesting component of it as well. The sheer amount of racers in a Grand Prix mode was pretty awesome. The one thing I don't like about those older N64 games, like racers like that, is when you get into the versus mode and it's like, yeah, you and your three other buddies that are going to play the game, like, why not include us with 24 or 25 other racers and let the four friends kind of battle it out? Like, I think that's a lot more fun, but, you know, I digress.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those choices that is kind of baffling. Like, I always thought that it would be interesting to have more like NPC characters in like a Mario Kart battle. Like doing the Mario Kart battle but with like 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
Would be nuts. There'd be shells flying everywhere. You'd be losing balloons left and right.
Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome, actually. I would love to do that. That God, man, that reminds me of playing Battles in Super Mario Kart on the SNES. Dude, it's just, I mean, it was four players as well, but it was always just fun.
You know, it's one of those things that's interesting, too. It's like, Captain Falcon, I think he's the only racing character that's ever been in a fighting game also. Like, he's a huge part of Smash, but he's a part of these racing games. And I know people have been clamoring for a new F-Zero game ever since the one for GameCube came out, and that's never happened.
Well, dude, I would, seriously, if an F-Zero game came out on the Switch, I'd buy it.
I'd love to see what they could do with that. Now, I heard somebody that I watch, George Weedman of Super Bunny Hop, and also the much referenced by me Dad and Sons podcast, he did an experiment where he took his Oculus and got all these different layered softwares running on his computer where he could basically run anything in VR. And he said by far one of the best things that he's done is F-Zero for GameCube on PC in VR. He said that it's absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet, dude. I would totally be down to play something like that. Well,
and now that we have Labo VR,
you know, I've got plenty of cardboard boxes here. We could probably,
we could whip up some Labo VR in no time.
Dude, I'm looking at 5 Labo VRs right now on my floor. I mean, we could totally build those in.
They
something.
Even have the Fragile on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. I mean, we just need some plastic to really make the goggle component of it.
And probably some rubber bands or something.
Yeah. And maybe some staples and glue. And some crayons because we got to decorate.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesus, dude. That's the biggest waste of money, the Labo consoles.
I don't know. That Labo VR is supposed to be pretty cool.
Dude, I kind of want to make our own.
I don't think we could.
I think we could. How hard can it be? It's cardboard.
I don't know, man. Cardboard's tough. You ever try working with cardboard? It doesn't want to cooperate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't pay $70 for this cardboard either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why it won't work. It's too cheap. You need the expensive cardboard.
It's actually really good cardboard on those boxes, right? It's diamond comic book boxes. Have you ever felt those? That is some tough cardboard. All right. So speaking of tough cardboard and pricing, do you think this is worth it?
You know, actually,
$15
loose, but I'm going to say that's definitely worth it. And you know what? I'm going to go a step above that. And speaking of cardboard, I don't think we ever really talk about it because we don't really do. Have we done N64 before? I feel like maybe once.
Maybe. But I know James and I did
a
couple N64 games in the past.
I'm a sucker for N64 boxes. I just like, I have such fond memories of looking and holding N64 boxes. Like, I would buy this for $41 in box if the box was in good condition. I would definitely do that because for some reason, N64 boxes just have such nostalgia for me because they are that exposed cardboard. They're like a precious commodity that just doesn't exist out in the wild as much as, you know, like a jewel case does.
I'm like that with Super Nintendo, so I'm more likely to buy like a complete copy of a Super Nintendo game, and I do have some N64 complete in box up there. $15 loose, you know, I'd like it, but I'm gonna say I would be more willing to pay $10 loose for this. I think it's just slightly inflated. You know, I might change my mind if I played a little bit more. And I mean, I did have fun with it. Could I see myself playing for hours on end? Maybe to unlock characters and maybe play with friends. But this didn't have the same type of vibe as other racers I've played. I've, you know, played years of Ridge Racer, Gran Turismo, Need for Speed. A game similar to like an F-Zero X, Kinetica is another like racing game I've played on the PS2. There's just a variety of different racing games I played, and this really isn't at the top of my list. The music is badass for sure, and the tracks are awesome, and it's aged very well for an N64 game. It's just not my favorite racer. There's just not enough going on in it to make it as fun, I guess. You know, like with the Gran Turismo, you can obviously modify your cars. You could buy more cars. You can do all these different customizations to it, different tracks. It's more of a real racer, a Ridge Racer type game. you kind of have a similar thing. You can customize your cars, but you can unlock some crazy looking vehicles as well. And obviously Need for Speed has a variety of different stories. A Kinetica game, you have combos. So while you're racing with your human racers, pretty much, you can do dancing combos and tricks and all these other things to get your boost up. So those are all games that I feel have a lot more to offer to the racing component. And this was just lacking a little bit for me. So I'm at $10. I'm going to say it's inflated.
All right. So I guess we're just at odds with this one. You know, I had a good time with this one. I think you did too. I think that sometime in the future, we should revisit and check in on F-Zero GX for GameCube and see, you know, how they went from this to basically the last full release F-Zero and see how it improved and, you know, if that seems worth it and if it's worth the wait for a potential sequel in the future.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I definitely think we need to revisit the F-Zero series down the road, and I think it'd be pretty cool. And I think there is one on Super Nintendo, isn't there, as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I have that. So that'd be a good one, too. We can do kind of similar to what James and I did in the last recording, just play multiple copies of the same series and then do a comparison on which one we felt was better.
Sounds good. We'll do a whole retrospective on F-Zero.
And just to remind people, this episode is coming out 2 weeks after we've recorded. I'm going to be out of town, obviously, so we're not going to have a chance to record during the normal time.
Gotta do it while we can.
Do it while we can, yeah. So some of this news might be a little out of date for some folks, and it might be new for others. So as always, our inflation deflation is going to be new for everybody.
Always.
Always. Well,
fresh.
If you are out of topics for this week, we're getting that at 51 or 51 and a half minute mark. I'm good to go if you are.
Yeah. So, hey, everybody, thanks again for joining us for 30 episodes. You know, we'll see how long it takes us to get to 50. Hopefully only 20 more weeks. But, you know, we'll get there and hopefully, you know, 50 by 50. Put the word out there. If you're listening, tell somebody to listen to us. Get us to 50 by 50.
50 by 50. So subscribe on YouTube. Subscribe on now Podbean is where we kind of have everything set up. And you can hear us on all major podcast applications.
Check us out on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Yep. When I update to Twitter, seeing as you don't like to touch it, apparently.
I'll have to figure that out again.
You will. I'm doing all of it through Instagram. Check out our Instagram. We got lots of cool photos. But... that being said, my name is John.
I'm Ryan.
And we are
the Game Deflators.